cannot disappear.
We hit him high, but what else can he do? He can't disappear.
In slow motion, it looks a little bit bad, but
accidents happen. They do.
He's done his knees. Well, this is incredible.
Now will come the magic sponge. There it is.
No scissors, no tape. Just a dirty old sponge, and it's worked. The sponge can wipe out a pandemic. It can cure us all.
Yes, welcome back to the Magic Sponge Podcast, a miracle cure for all your rugby league injury issues. I'm Brian Seney. Most of you know me as the guy behind all the things NRL Physio on social media. This is the first show for 2024, and I've dragged my fellow co-host, Physio. James, you're back, mate. It is absolutely stinking hot at the moment. It's raining all over the shop. Summer, look, I'm not the biggest fan of it at the moment. It can go away, mainly A, to get rid of the weather, but B, because once it goes away, we're deep in footy season. How are you, mate?
Brian, really good. Really keen for 2024 to roll around into footy season. I've had a bit of a sting this week, just returning to work after 7 months off. So I was doing the stay-at-home dad stuff for 7 months. So I had a very rude shock to the system being back in the workplace this week and trying to use my physio brain. So wasn't the most fun time for me, so I had to get on top of that, Brian. But all happy to be back on the sponge again and getting into things 2024.
Love it, mate. Yeah, look, it's been a bit of a dusty off season for me. It's like I just can't seem to catch up with myself these days. There seems to be that much going on, unfortunately. So it's going to be an interesting start to the year with it being so busy without NRL and all the stuff that comes with keeping up with the injuries. But yeah, I'm going to have to find a way to weave that back into my life. But I'm sure once the footy gets back in, mate, I'm devastated we're not going to Vegas, put it that way. That would have just supercharged me, I think. Got me right into everything. But hopefully next year or the year after, we'll have to save ourselves some magic round. But look, as always, guys, this is your one-stop shop for all things injury analysis in the NRL. We give our take on in-game injuries, review the big injury and rehab news. We've got casualty ward, talk through the implications of certain injuries on things like recovery time, performance, and, of course, super coach and fantasy scoring. Tip of the iceberg, all the information that we give you on here, because we go through even more in depth on patreon.com/NRLphysio. You'll get access to the best NRL casualty ward on the internet, detailed write-ups, and of course the injury profiles. They'll be coming out again this year. Just a little injury profiles note, which all my Patreons who are currently on Patreon know. It's going to be a little bit more condensed this year. As I said, it's been a pretty busy time of the year. Full on outside of NRL physio for me in life at the moment. So usually I think my injury profiles in the past have been like over 200 players. At the moment, it's probably going to be somewhere around that 60 to 80. It's just going to be a lot more condensed and focused on those guys that I know are relevant for Supercoach and fantasy, just to save me some headaches and save you guys some, you know, I guess useless information coming out. I just won't have the time this year, but it will just be on Patreon this year is all I'm planning to do. So the base package for Patreon's $5 a month, I think. So it'll cost you $5 and then at least, even though I am reducing the number of players, you still get the benefits that becoming a Patreon has with the casualty ward and the questions every week and all that kind of thing and the write-ups that come, you know, into the season as well. So, yeah, hopefully you're still getting some value out of that $5 if you do decide to jump on board. But otherwise, guys, look, let's not muck around, get straight into it. Let's wrap up the injuries that have happened in the off-season since we last had a podcast.
I don't know exactly what he's done. I would have thought it was an ankle, but I'm just guessing.
He shouldn't be out for a long period of time. I mean, I'm no doctor. We have to wait for the scans, obviously, but that'd be more positive than negative.
2024, this is the first one, Brian. We're fresh, we're keen, we're ready to rip and tear. So I'm just going to spit some names and injuries at you one by one. And I think for everyone listening in, they want to hear your takes and your opinions about what to expect for this year and potential implications for Supercoach. So first one, which is a very interesting situation, which you've documented a fair bit of detail about, was Ronald Volkman with his shoulder injury. I'll give you the soapbox now so you can have a good long discussion about this one, because this is one of the more bizarre scenarios I can recall in recent memory about a bloke getting a release from a club and then all of a sudden failing a medical and effectively ending up clubless. What's been the, I guess you can do the summary here, Brian, and give us the rundown on Ronald Volkman.
Yeah, effectively, I think, look, you would have seen, if anybody follows me on socials, you would have seen my my posts about it as it sort of has been happening. So effectively, he had a contact shoulder injury at the Warriors on December the 12th or somewhere around mid-December. They assessed it, decided not to get it scanned and just sort of treat it, you know, conservatively. It mustn't have been too much of a concern at that point, or, you know, or they just didn't think there was enough concern to get it scanned. Now, I've seen a few people sort of say, you know, that's dodgy on the Warriors' behalf. Look, guys get lit up, contact injuries, that kind of thing, you know, all the time. So it's hard to know, because, like, I do think that now we've found out that there's two screws dislodged in his shoulder from the previous shoulder reconstruction. So I would be surprised if that hadn't at least diminished his function enough to sort of be like, oh, we probably should check this out. But there are some things, like Michael Morgan, you know, played for ages with screws loose in his shoulder before they eventually had a scan and found out that, and he knew there was an issue there, but he was just like, no, it's okay, like, I'll play through it, it's fine. So it just depends, you know, on the player as well. Ronald Volkman could have been underreporting his symptoms, those kind of things. So I, you know, there are things that you could, you know, in hindsight, it's wonderful to sort of sit there and be like, oh, the Warriors should have scanned it. But I think in reality, there's situations like that all the time where scans just don't happen, and it's easy to sit there, you know, that once all the scan results have come out and been like, you know, you guys stuffed up. But then, and this is where I think the massive issue is, and I'll even sort of reflect on myself. Like, I sort of thought at the start, I think one of my tweets initially was, you know, if Volkman doesn't end up back on a contract of some sort, then he's been stitched up by one or both of the clubs. And I purely said that because I would never in my wildest thoughts have come across or thought that his manager would have approached this situation like he has, because effectively what the reports are is that he pushed through a release for Volkman from his Warriors contract on Christmas Eve or right before Christmas. There was no Dragons contract confirmed at that point. And this is pretty stock standard. Like, usually a player will then go to their, you know, once the talks have been there, and you might have had informal talks with your club being like, hey, will you release me? I've got a good deal over here. I've got a 5-year deal or whatever it is over here, or an opportunity to play first grade, which Volkman has. Are you okay if I, you know, start to negotiate, blah, blah, blah? Yes, that's fine. So off you go. You train with the club, you do a medical, and part of that medical will be running them through fitness tests. So, you know, getting them in, you know, I guess training situations, running them through certain things to make sure that they're physically okay. So in that part of it, that's all completely normal. And I think what I've come to the conclusion with since, and since we've seen all of the information out there, is that the minor errors that you can point to from the Warriors and the Dragons in hindsight. So, oh, the Dragons shouldn't have announced it on social media. They shouldn't have, you know, had footage of him at training. Yes, I completely agree with that. But all of those things are not a big deal if the manager hasn't sorted out a release from his previous contract without a new contract ready to go. Like, there's no need for that to happen. And I think I read one report where it was like, oh, he needed to push it through so they could start negotiating with the Dragons. And that's just not how it happens. Like, and that's, I'm not a manager, so I get that. But there's been multiple other player managers, you know, there was a lawyer who wrote an article today, like, saying that is not how it works. Like, you wait until you've pretty much got a signed contract. You lodge the release from your old contract and your new contract pretty much one after the other. So, like, almost immediately. So the fact that wasn't happened, it was that space, that 10 days between Christmas Eve and when he would potentially pass a Dragons fitness test, there's totally undone him. And I think the complication here is that he obviously suffered the shoulder injury in December. But my thing is, what if he went out while he was training with the Dragons and did his ACL? Like, you know, a totally fresh injury, which he could have absolutely done, because we're about to talk about a guy at the Dragons who did do his ACL. If the manager forcing through that release has just totally stuffed him for no reason, there's no need to do that. So I think, even I've, you know, had to backtrack my words a little bit and say, like, I think the clubs could have managed things better in ways, but the minor errors that you could point to from the clubs just don't have an effect if there's not that gap between the release and the new contract. And I think that's what it comes down to. So, look, at the end of the day, Ronald Volkman requires another shoulder reconstruction. He'll be out for at least 6 months, I think they said, because it obviously is quite an extensive shoulder reconstruction. The big thing, I think, I've heard a lot of people say, oh, you know, but he got paid out, I think, 200 grand of his contract. Like, he'll be fine. A shoulder reconstruction and an NRL level rehab, you know, physio, massage, you know, S&C, all that kind of stuff from a shoulder reconstruction. I mean, you might have more of an idea being in the public sector, but I would say it would be more than 50 grand, probably, you know, like between 50 and 100 maybe once all is said and done.
A chunk of money.
Yeah, because the only other option is to wait publicly. And I saw, you know, the public, what's the public wait list for a shoulder reco? Like, it'd be a long time, right? So I just think at this point in time, yeah, Volkman's just been really hard done by, and I just hope that there's some sort of recourse. Cynic in me thinks that the manager should pay for it all, to be honest, with what's happened here. But look, at the end of the day, heart and thoughts go out to Volkman, because I think it's just a horrible situation, hopefully one that we'll never see again in the NRL.
Yeah, fingers crossed for him on the rehab journey that he's going to have to go through. Second name on the list here, Brian, from the Dragons as well, Corey Allen, ACL injury, so he's going to be out for the season, obviously. Was it at the first training session that he was at as well? Was it session one that he injured his ACL?
Oh, I'm not sure. I hadn't actually seen it. I think it was like effectively session one for the new year. So I'm not sure when he signed and when that all happened. But yeah, look, I mean, just absolutely horrible, especially for the Dragons, who could have done with a Queensland Origin legend in their midst to kind of, you know, lift their spirits and their performance. But yep, same thing. Thoughts go out to Corey. He won't play this year, obviously. Next year I wouldn't be expecting the world from him, because obviously coming back from an ACL is a tough one. But good luck with the rehab.
For sure. Next one on the list, Brian, was Payne Haas. Reported as a hamstring injury. Doesn't seem like the Broncos are majorly concerned by this, do they?
No. I think minor hamstring injury, just like some tightness, I think, more than anything, was what they were saying. So it is his second hamstring issue in 12 months, but we'll talk about Payne soon, why we're both, you know, pretty keen on him. I'm not concerned with that at all.
Very good. For the Penny Panthers, a couple of big names here. It's good to talk about Nathan Cleary with his PCL injury. We've spoken about that previously on the podcast in late 2023. But then also another name we've talked about fairly frequently as well was Jerome Luai with his shoulder injury and subsequent reconstruction. So they're talking about him playing World Club Challenge, I think. And that would be about 4 months post-surgery. It seems a little bit quick, doesn't it, for Jerome, would you say?
Yeah, I just think 4 months is really pushing it. Like, look, he had a Latigé, which is just the type of shoulder reconstruction. It's where they take a bit of bone off the front of the shoulder blade and kind of attach it to the front of the ball and socket joint of the shoulder to make it a bit deeper of a socket so that the ball sort of sits in there a bit more securely. We've seen players come back from that in around 3 months, so it is possible. I'd just be surprised if they really try and push him through. Like, I know the Panthers have sort of said, you know, we really want to win the World Cup Club Challenge. It's something they haven't done before. It's a trophy that they don't have in their trophy cabinet. So I get that. But it's a long NRL season, you know. So sort of, you know, pushing him to return at 4 months, do you just give him that extra time? I think either way, I'll put it this way, if he does play, then he's obviously absolutely smashed his rehab and he's just absolutely killing it, because I think for them to take, you know, some form of calculated risk at 4 months post, then he must be doing really, really well. And then Nathan Cleary with the PCL, it did come out that it was a complete tear. Well, that was kind of what we expected with that brace. A lot of people have asked, you know, oh my God, I put out a post saying he's got to play the rest of his career without a PCL. That sounds scary. It's not. Look, it's something that down the track, you know, he could be dealing with some instability or some meniscus issues, those kind of things, because of the PCL isn't there. But I think for the moment, particularly in the short term, it's definitely not something that I'm worried about. We've seen Billy Slater, you know, GI, and GI is probably a perfect example, right? Like, he tore his PCL completely and probably played 5 or 6 years at the top of his game, and then late in his career it really mucked up on him. But then we had someone like Billy Slater who had minimal knee issues, you know, late into his career. So it's not something that I'm overly concerned with in the short term.
Next one on the list, Brian, was a favourite of ours, Shawnee Johnson, spotted in a moon boot with a query of an ankle injury there. Anything to be worried about for round one?
Mate, injury news across the Tasman, once again, just is not, because I think we got the you know, the heads up on this, or it would have been Friday morning maybe, and now it's currently Sunday night and we've heard nothing, and apparently scan results were coming in Friday afternoon. So, yeah, look, like as I said in my post, like there's just not, even if it's a, you know, a syndesmosis injury, high grade and requires surgery, 6 to 8 weeks, so 7 weeks till round one, I'm just not overly fussed. Like, you know, we're both big Sean Johnson apologists here. So, you know, with a bit of bias maybe and a bit of rose-tinted glasses on. But, like, my sort of thought was a similar sort of thing if this happened to, like, an Adam Reynolds type. Like, they're senior players. They're not super reliant on, like, some massive preseason where they've got to, you know, work their fitness out. They're both in situations of, like, a really solid spine that hasn't changed all that much. They've got the combos there. I'm just not... Yeah, not overly fussed. I think they're most circumstances he should be fine for round one, and I don't think it'll affect performance all that much.
Next one, Brian, was very relevant to Super Coach David Fifita. He's had a pec tear and surgery. What is his timeline shaping up like for the start of the NRL season, and obviously a big one for Super Coach enthusiasts as well?
Yeah, absolutely. This is a huge one. You know, he absolutely killed it last year, coming off a pec tear. It'll be 13 weeks post-surgery at round one. Usual return to play for that surgery type's 10 to 14 weeks. So 13 weeks falls in that time frame, but look, it's still not ideal, and especially for a forward, I think having a pec that probably won't be at 100% come round one, it's definitely likely to affect him. Tackling, he probably won't be, you know, quite as good in the wrestle, sort of shrugging guys off, pushing guys off, those kind of things. But look, it's probably not enough for me. If I was going to start with him, I wouldn't lean away from him too much. It maybe gives me like 5 to 10%. And I'll, in the injury profile for him, I'll go through some past examples of guys with pec tears and sort of how they perform, particularly from an edge forward perspective, how they performed immediately on return, just so we can have some comparisons of you know, guys who've done it in the past. But yeah, like for me, probably for classic-wise, it hasn't really been all that relevant, because I think there's just that many good mid-rangers. I hadn't really considered bringing in Dave at that point in time. For draft, I'm probably not the kind of guy who's drafting Dave for feeder, you know, in the first round or something like that. I'm shooting for you know, fullbacks with upside and halves with upside and those kind of things. So, yeah, it's not one that's changed me all that much. So if you're a Dave Feeder lover, it wouldn't shy me away from him too much. How do you feel from a Super Coach perspective on Feeder?
I think at full fitness, if you're talking draft, he's probably an interesting chat in like that early second round sort of margin. I agree with you. I don't think he'd be in like the first round necessarily for me, but given what he scored last year, you could make an argument he'd be a fairly high round two. I think if you're sitting there on the clock and he's sort of like maybe mid-late two now with this news, it might lean me more that way a little bit. I don't think I would start him from a standard point of view. I think my team construction is going to be big at fullback and big at halfback this year is how I'm going to construct my team. So subsequently, someone's going to miss out, and most of the time that's going to be like a big second row forward, I would dare say, like someone like a Fifita, where you can try and target some mid-range guys or some lower price guys. So that's the way I'm just going to build my team for the start of the year. So fingers crossed for Dave Fifita. Hopefully he's back near his best come round one for the Titans this year. And Des Hasler, very interested to see how he shapes those boys up this year with Des Hasler, the magic there from the mad scientist. For the Brizzy Broncos, a couple of injuries here, Brian. Fletcher Baker with groin surgery, and Jesse Arthurs has been reported as a fairly moderate to high-grade ankle sprain, I think, as well, hasn't he?
Yeah, I think by what I can glean from it, it's more than likely a lateral ankle sprain. So they are aiming for the trials for him. But, you know, that was kind of, you know, 3-4 weeks down the track. So for those lateral ankle sprains, for it to take 3 to 4 weeks, it'd have to be a pretty significant one. And apparently you had to get carried off the field at training. So never nice to see. But as we know, usually those ones barks worse than bite. Guys are usually back relatively quickly. I do think the Fletcher Baker news is relevant, particularly from a Supercoach perspective. He's someone who a lot of people I've seen in that second front row spot, classic-wise as well. A good plug-and-play, you know, potentially could be taking that Tom Flegler role. I just think still in limited training as of this week, coming off groin surgery, I'd want to see a lot from him in the trials to convince me to buy him, because I just could absolutely see, something new team coming off, major surgery. Let's take the first 6 weeks to kind of build his workload up. So, yeah, not someone who I'm jumping up and down about, who I would have been if there wasn't this groin surgery and limited training at this point in time.
It's interesting so many people are plugging him in at second row forward to start off, Brian, because really Payne Haas and, you know, Paddy Carrigan are going to get the minutes there. And then you've got a few musical chairs there. I guess Kobe Hetherington's one that's probably looking at more minutes. You've got Corey Jensen, you've got Marty DePauw. You know, those guys play fairly significant minutes. Xavier Wilson's coming back as well. You know, there's a lot of depth there in that sort of middle spot for the Bronx. So Fletcher Baker, I don't see him as an automatic sub in for Tommy Flegler. And Tommy Flegler didn't often get mega minutes last year at the Broncos either. Maybe they want to take Payne and Carrigan get down a little bit. I just don't see them as those type of players. So I think those guys are 60, 65 minutes, lock it in every single day of the week. So it wouldn't be the way I would be sort of trending with Fletcher Baker. So I guess for those people, probably good luck to you if you're going to do that. But I would just have a bit of cause for pause if I was thinking that way with the injury situation, and probably just the depth there in the Broncos as well, Brian, would be my take. What is your take there with him being a candidate for standard?
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I just don't think he's someone who I would who I'd be going for, unless, as I said, if we get massive, you know, performance in the trials, maybe. But at the moment, yeah, I go elsewhere.
Onto the Finns, Brian. Connolly Lemuelu he's sort of got a multi-ligament knee injury there, MCL, PCL. What are we sort of expecting in terms of his time frame, maybe being fit and ready for round one, and maybe what that means for the Dolphins, how they'll line up?
Yeah, I never like multi-ligament knee injuries, James. They're, you know, it doesn't sound like he needed surgery. So once again, the PCL very rarely needs to be repaired. And then the MCL, if it's only a partial tear, pop it in a brace for a certain amount of time. It's just more when there's multi-ligament issues, you're looking at instability, obviously, in multiple directions. So the MCL kind of controls that falling in of the knee, and then the PCL, it's more in that forward-backwards deceleration, jumping, landing, those kind of things, stopping, hyperextension, all that kind of stuff. So you've got instability in multiple directions, makes the rehab a little bit harder, the mind games a little bit as well. Like we see players coming back, and I have athletes all the time coming back from those multi-ligament injuries. I would argue sometimes like an MCL, PCL like this can be tougher mentally than an ACL at times. You know, if you've got a clean ACL, it's still, you know, once you start mucking with instability in multiple directions, it can just, yeah, really play with a player's sort of mental edge a little bit too. So he's someone who I wouldn't be jumping on early season. I am more than happy to wait. Hopefully, as a Finns fan, he surprises me and absolutely kills it. But I think with you and Aitken probably moving to the forwards this year, especially an edge forward kind of role with the Finns having bought two centres, I think there is some depth there for them to kind of ease him back in as well. So, yeah, he's someone who I'm definitely cooler on since the news of this injury.
Good one for those who are NFL sickos out there as well is Kyle Pitts, who's the tight end from the Falcons. So he was initially reported late season 2022 as a complete MCL rupture. But then all of this year, he didn't look great on it. And it was later reported that he was MCL, PCL, and meniscus. So the Falcons massively underreported his injury. And subsequently, his explosions, top-end speed, in and out of cuts wasn't the best this year. He was someone that, I guess, has always been touted as a fairly you know, athletic player that fits a big profile, that should be probably doing more than he currently is, hampered by quarterback position there in the Falcons. But he's one that had a similar type injury there, multi-league. He had surgery for his, I think he had a PCL reco, because the question was, well, if he's had an MCL, why is he still in a brace 8 months later? And later it was reported that, okay, it's MCL, PCL, and a meniscus in there. So he's sort of a good sort of maybe comparison, I suppose you could say. Not exactly the same, but someone who is probably taken this whole year to get anywhere near back to his best, and probably wasn't even at his best with that as well. Probably not much else to talk about with Conley Lamoureux there, Brian, but he was exceptional last year for the Dolphins. So hopefully he comes back to his best and he can keep punching out some big minutes and some big super coach scores there for people as well. From the Knights, Kai Pierce-Paul is the new recruit there with a toe injury. Do you know much about this, Brian? I don't know too much about this situation, sorry.
Yeah, apparently he was like playing through it back in the UK. So he was playing through this injury. The Knights kind of claimed that they didn't know a whole lot about it and only kind of discovered it once he came to the club and they kind of assessed him and scanned it and those kind of things. So, yeah, his manager obviously did a good job and made sure the release and the contract were lodged immediately, one after the other. Yeah, look, another one who, especially talking to Jackson Hastings late last year, I know you asked a really good question about who's going to take over that Lockie Fitz role, and Hastings had a lot of good things to say about Pierce-Paul. It sounds like he's a bit touch and go for the start of the season. And even so, like, he's another one who I think initially, as soon as Jackson sort of said that, I was like, yeah, this guy sounds awesome. Lock him into my side. But now I'm like, yeah, a toe issue for a guy whose game is so, you know, heavily explosion, you know, breaking tackles, getting the arm free, change of direction, all that kind of stuff. It's just not something that I like to dance with early in the season when there's probably other options, especially in that second row. We've just spoken about the you know, sort of how we're approaching that second row position, probably a lot like a lot of people. So, yeah, he's not a mid-ranger who I'd be looking to dance on. I don't know about you, but, yeah, that's kind of where I sit with him.
Yeah, look, probably not for me. I think the Knights are pretty deep at edge, actually. I think even though Lockie Fitz has made his way out there, you know, I know a few people are talking about Tyson Frizzell getting that left edge. Then you've got Dylan Lucas, Adam Elliott's played on an edge there in the past. There's a few other people sniffing around in and around there as well, whereas Kai Pierce-Paul sounds like probably smaller minutes, higher impact sort of type player at this point in his career. So probably wouldn't lean me to bringing him into my side to start off the season, I don't believe. So he might be sort of on the watch and wait. Hopefully he's at a sort of basement level price and he can sort of make some waves later in the year if he gets his opportunity. Lucky last, Brian. So Connor Tracy, now at the Bulldogs, calf or ankle injury. That was reported quite some time ago. I think it sounded like it was reasonably minor. I didn't I didn't see anything from Gus Gould on the Twitter space that sort of indicated there'd be anything more significant than that from Dr. Gus Gould.
Mate, I wouldn't have seen anything from Gus, unfortunately. But I think someone, it was a bit weird. It was one of those Dr. Gus moments where I think he came out with a tweet being like, Connor suffered an injury, he'll be out for ages, or there was a report. It was something that effectively there was one person saying he was going to be out into the season, and another person was like, no, it's extremely minor. So I haven't heard any reports of him still struggling and all that kind of stuff. So I think for the moment, I'm pretty happy to assume he's all good and should be good to go for round one. So not something that I'm overly fussed with.
Yeah, nicely wrapped up there, Brian. What we're going to do next, we're going to talk deep into Supercoach and deep into, I guess, injury considerations with Supercoach in mind as well. So what we're going to do, we're going to go through this list club by club to get your January take here. Obviously, a lot will change between now and the start of the season. Once trials happen, once first team list Tuesday drops, what a time that is for everyone looking forward to the season. So I'm going to go through one of the people that I initially like from a Supercoach point of view, and then Ryan, you're going to chime in and add your special flavour with the injury considerations. First off the rank here, so Brizzy Broncos, home team here for me. In terms of interesting Supercoach takes, I couldn't find anything super interesting here, so I'm going to talk about Payne Haas. And as boring as this sounds, he averaged 73.5 last year, but when you dig into the detail here, only one try, two line breaks in 20 games. And for reference, so Tino Fasu-Malawi had 6-6 and he averaged 77. So what I'm thinking here is he might not be someone that I start with, but I think he's got to get in your team ASAP. He's probably due for some positive try scoring, uptick, I would say, maybe a little bit more offload. There was a couple of games, I think, in terms of Origin, in terms of the grand final, there was a few that I can just remember where he just nearly pulled through a tackle or nearly made a line break or nearly set up a line break assist where he could really potentially see an average over 80 this year. I don't think that would be an unreasonable thing. Minutes will be the discussion, but Payne's got a massive engine. I don't think Kevy Walters is going to be having him off the field too much. He's a marquee player for them. He's on big bickies. He's going to be seeing minutes. And I think he can outdo what he did last year based on that, Brian. So Payne Haas is my take for the Brisbane Broncos. Pretty boring. There wasn't anyone I really liked anything more than that. What about yourself for the Broncos? Who have you got your eye on? And what do you want to sort of give us some insight into from an injury point of view?
Mate, I'll just a little word on Payne Haas. I'm all about him. I think something that people forget is that the last two seasons he's played through like niggling injuries, ongoing injuries that are unrelated. So 2022, it was the AC joint issues. But then last year, and it went a bit under the radar, he had an ankle sprain in the preseason that then he aggravated in Origin. In Origin camp, they said he was playing through this ongoing ankle tendon issue from the injury earlier in the year and then was dealing with it later in the season as well. So this is a guy who, like, I would not be surprised, and I've, spoiler alert, I started with the Broncos for the injury profiles and I've already done Payne's. And I've said, I wouldn't be surprised to see him average in the 80s, this year, because I think there is, obviously Flegler's gone and all that kind of stuff, but the injury, like I could have said he was my injury consideration because I think that's something that's gone under the radar a little bit, is that he did play with that ankle issue last year as well. But another guy played through an issue for most of the season who I think could really explode this year, and I'm sure saying this, you're, as a Broncos homer, going to be right behind me, and that's Ezra Mamm. He had a contact knee injury, I believe it was in round 3, I'll just check so I'm not getting that wrong, yep, round 3, and played with it for a while, and then aggravated it significantly later in the season. I think it was round 23 as well. But just had his knee strapped off and on for much of the season, was dealing with, a few different stability issues, pain, that kind of thing. So here's a guy who, we all saw what he can do in the grand final, scoring 3 tries and that kind of thing. He's another year older into his career. He hopefully, won't be dealing with that a knee issue heading into this season. There's no real, concern for me in terms of, like, I'm not worried that that knee issue is hanging around into the next year. So, yeah, I just think he's someone who 5'8 is just like a dumpster fire. Like, it's pretty much Dylan Brown and then nothing, right? So if you're looking for someone in that mid-range, especially from a Supercoach standpoint, like I don't mind Ezra Mann. I think there's some promise there. What about you?
Yeah, he's a highlights reel, isn't he, Ezra Mann? He's someone you love having in your team just for the Thursday, Friday night games because you just know he's going to be putting something on. Like that flick he did last year to Reynolds around the corner still just lives forever in my dreams. Just gets me some action in my wife run undies when I think about it from time to time there with Ezra. But he's certainly in consideration at six. You're right. There's not much after Dylan Brown is there to be in super love loop. It seems like between, you know, the second 5-8 overall and the 12th, you're sort of within 5 points. So you can sort of pick your poison in how you want to approach that position, I believe, especially for draft. I think you've got so many options for draft. Standard's probably a little bit more difficult where you probably want to squeeze Brown in. But again, you can...
I did forget Cam Munster. Along. That's pretty bad from me. Cam Munster's pretty good too. Yeah. He's okay.
The thing is about Cam is like, I can't think of too many times where I've had Cam in my team where I was like, he's just gone on a big tear of massive.
He's someone I'd never have owned. Like, I just never own him year on year. I just don't, whether it be draft or classic, for whatever reason. I don't know whether, like, I've got it in my head he doesn't have a super high ceiling. There's probably some stats guys out there who can do it for me. But, I've just never, same as you, never really felt good about owning Cam Munster when there's other options at 5'8".
Yeah, I agree. So we'll move on to the Canberra Raiders next, Brian. And this was a hard one to figure out. Someone that I love for Supercoach purposes. It's a bit of a yuck all round look at this team for me. So I was sort of thinking, like, do we talk about sort of speculative ads like Trey Mooney, who debuted last year, or who Hepapuru as well has been sort of spoken about. Morgan Smithy's in the 13 jumper as well, but far out, mate. There's a lot of old veteran forwards in Canberra. I was really high on Xavier Savage last year. And I think if he started at fullback or winger in a dual sort of scenario, that would be game on for me. He's probably the only one I can sort of think of. And you wanted to speak about him a bit more.
Yeah, well, I was the same. Looking through the team, I think, like, especially I tried to make the injury, my injury pick somewhat super coach relevant. And just, I could have gone Danny Levi. I think he had, like, a jaw fracture and a few other things as well. But I've gone with Savage mainly around, like, he had that jaw fracture to begin the season, was apparently a bit, like the jaw fracture, was he a bit out of favour? Who knows? But like there was so, like you forget the year before, there was so much chat on him. Like he's so good. There is that Chevy Stewart coming through who is apparently an absolute gun as well. But yeah, I'd love to see Savage absolutely kill it. He did have a high grade hamstring strain last season. And for someone who relies a lot on speed, that could have some implications. You'd expect his injury risk to be right back down by the start of this season though. But yeah, I just think with Savage, hopefully it was just the jaw fracture that cost him his job to start the season. He comes out and absolutely kills it this year because, yeah, he's someone who I was very high on like yourself.
Yeah, going back to the year before, you might recall he scored that really long-range try against Parra in one of the finals games. It was just electric and you just thought, okay, this guy's arrived. And then 2023 just didn't get off the ground for him, did it? Just injury, curtailed his start. Then Seb Chris got the fullback spot. And the Raiders sort of just won a few games. And Ricky was like, well, Hopper Whitey's on my wing and Seb Chris is at fullback. And no one else really got a look in there, which was a little bit surprising to me. Because I think from my point of view outside in, I think they needed that bit of that sort of dynamic, sort of X factor that could break a game open a little bit more often towards the end of the year. And I thought he would be able to provide that. But again, he had that high-grade hamstring late in the season. Who knows what that's going to look like for him this year. But if he gets named, he's definitely someone I would be having a good long look at in draft formats especially. I don't think you probably want to go there for standard because I think there's so many other big names and big options at fullback. I think you want to look at that draft angle probably a little bit more. Canterbury Bulldogs next, Brian. So Josh Curran's the one I'm going to look at here. It's pretty simple with Josh Curran, isn't it? If he gets minutes, he scores big points. He's shown this time and time again over many, many years. I would like him more on an edge to get him 80 minutes, but then is he going to get rid of Kikau Preston? I don't think so. I don't think that's the angle in there. I think he might be someone who gets 13, gets pretty good minutes. I still think at his price, he's probably a pretty good start. The other one I'm probably a little bit more in on, but I just don't know how this is going to shake out, is Stephen Crichton. I think if he gets fullback, and it's probably not out of the realm that he gets the goal kicking as well, because he's a pretty damn good goal kicker whenever Cleary's been missing games for Penrith. I just rate him from a talent point of view. I think if he's a dual centre wing fullback, he is definitely in my team. I think he's an out-and-out gun. he would be someone I'd really, really, really like to look at in my super coach setup, Brian, I reckon. Who have you got your eye on from the Bulldogs from an injury point of view or a bounce back perspective?
Mate, Stephen Crichton was. I drafted him in a what do you call those ones? Dynasty or like keeper league in like the fourth or fifth round, like a couple of weeks after he signed for the Doggies to play fullback. Because I'm like, I was hoping at least for this year that he'd be centre wing. Like, you know, you could pick him in centre wing in Supercoach and goal kicking, and I can have a goal kicking fullback in my centre wing is what I'm hoping. So I am right behind that. I'm really hoping that's what happens. My one, a real favourite of the show. I think we unfortunately didn't get time to get the Golden Sponge Awards out, which I'm really filthy about, unfortunately, at the end of last year. But like, I think one of our awards was like the, you know, crazy effort of the year or something like that. And mine was Jacob Kiraz. He played through that MCL sprain. He came back. I had a look today because I was like, I swear he came back way too soon. So the crazy effort of the year was that chase that he did after he'd injured his MCL. So he'd already injured it in that game, which turned out to be a grade 2 injury, so a partial tear. And he chased back on this like length of the field try. It looked like he was, you know, running on 1.25 legs and just didn't give up, you know, like that kind of thing. That's a guy you want in your team from a Bulldogs perspective. But from a Supercoach perspective, he came back from that grade 2 MCL in 3 weeks, which that is pretty quick. That is really quick. And he just didn't look right. He did not look right. And the way I've put it, so he then also had an elbow hyperextension. Then he had a lower back stress fracture to finish the season as well. I had a look at his stats today. You can pretty much break his season up into 3 lots of 6 games. Because pre-MCL injury, he had 6 games, he averaged 80 points. Then post-MCL injury, then plus the elbow injury, he averaged 43 in the middle 6 games of his season. And then the final 6 weeks of the season, which, you know, he's over, so he'd had a couple of buys to, you know, give his knee a bit of rest and that kind of thing, and he'd gotten far enough past the elbow injury. Final 6 games, he averaged 64. So it's not quite at that 80, but it's back up that way. But the other thing you've got to consider about that 64 is that's leading into them discovering he's got a back stress fracture. You know, so how much pain's he playing through there as well? So, look, like, you know, yeah, I'm sure the old injury-prone people are out there telling me you've got a guy who suffered 3 nasty injuries in a season, he's injury-prone, but none of those are, you know, the knee issue was a contact one. The elbow hyperextension is a contact one. The lower back stress fracture, you could argue there is some concern there sort of moving forward. Is that something that he's, you know, had an imbalance or had some issues that he's got to address? You would assume he does address that over the offseason. So in a Doggies team that hopefully, I mean, we're all talking about them improving into last season, which didn't overly happen. Hopefully this season that does happen for the Doggies fans out there. Yeah, like I like him as an option, and he's someone who I like stacking my center wings, particularly in draft, but he's someone who I would not be afraid if it kind of fell that way and I ended up with him as my first or second center wing. Like, that seems like crazy, but I would not be opposed to that at all. Like, if you stacked elsewhere and you end up with Jacob Kiraz as your CTW1 in draft, like, I'm cool to take that risk, because I think if he can go injury free and as we've seen there, he pretty much just needs to avoid a few unlucky contact injuries. I really like him.
Yeah, his base was unbelievable last year as well, wasn't it? Base and power stats, he was just ripping and tearing. So hopefully we see him at his best again this year, Jacob Kiraz. For Cronulla Sharks, couldn't find anything super interesting here, Brian. So went Blake Brayley. He might be one of the few 80-minute hookers left. I think they're sort of becoming less and less frequent in the NRL. He's another year older, always been highly touted. They're going to be in a good, strong team. He might be someone that you can look at in, especially draft format, I think, that might be fairly appealing if he's just going to lock down an 80-minute sort of starting position there. What about other issues or other guys from the Sharks that you want to sort of keep your eye on?
Yeah, I could have gone Dale Finucane here. He, like, suffered the bicep injury at the end of the year. you know, coming back into this year, like, surely McInnes gets a start, like you would think, you know, at 13, which makes him a little bit more relevant. But I think Teague Wilton with a meniscus repair, like, he performed really well on that left edge from a Supercoach standpoint, certainly to start the season, then obviously had the meniscus injury, which ended his season. It does have sort of some implications for longer term, you know, issues, but I think anybody who's shying away from him from an injury perspective doesn't need to worry all that much. I don't think a meniscus repair, even though it knocked him out for a significant part of the season, I'm not overly concerned about that. It would more be, and I think there's been a bit of chat around about, you know, his defensive frailties, does that cost him his spot, those kind of things. So I just wanted to mention him here in that I'm not concerned about his knee. So you approach him with, or I would approach him with no injury considerations. I would just approach him with his role in the team and how you think he can perform.
Very good. Probably not much else from the Sharks there, Brian, because we're going to move on to the Mighty Dolphins up there in Redcliffe. So my person I've got an eye on, it's not really one person, I think just whoever plays fullback out of Herbie Farnworth or Hamiso Tavaifuadoʻo, I think whichever one gets fullback is what I'm probably most keen on. I think they're both absolutely elite. They're probably in the conversation for best left centre in the comp. Both of them with Stephen Crichton probably in that same conversation, or Latrell Mitchell when he plays there in Origin. I just think you want whoever plays fullback there. I think they're probably going to be moderately priced, but I could see a situation where, like, you know, like a guy like Herbie, he could be really attractive if he's dual, especially if he's fullback and centre wing eligible potentially. I think that's one to definitely keep an eye on. Who have you got an eye on from a Dolphins point of view? And who's looking good at the fan day that you had there the other day as well?
Mate, all
in good nick?
All of them. Like every single one, just yeah. Peak of their powers. Yeah. You know, we'll talk about my favourite player later and his transformation. But one guy who I, like, was sneaky, like, it was almost like, who is that to start with? Josh Kerr. He has lost a bunch of weight. Because I was always really, whenever he used to play on an edge for the Dragons, I'd be like, why? Like, he's huge. How can you play him on an edge? But, mate, he's trimmed up. I couldn't believe it. I was like, wow, they're doing something right out at the lovely grassy plains of Redcliffe. But my one to look at from an injury perspective, Jeremy Marshall-King. I think not a lot of people are sort of overly keen to pay up at the hooker position unless you're going Harry Grant. But I think Jeremy Marshall-King does have some argument. So he played through, obviously, that shoulder issue. So you take out his injury-affected games in terms of the minutes, because he was usually an 80-minute player, but he had a couple of games, two or three games there that were directly affected by that shoulder injury. So I think there were other games where his performance was affected, but his workload wasn't, so his minutes were still quite up there. But even if you just, like, take out the ones where he had restricted minutes, and he's up at a 70 average or a 69-70 average from, you know, early 60s. So, and then you've got other games where, like, how limiting was it on his performance? You know, could he not, you know, perform as well because that shoulder was bothering him? Look, he did have a lot of attacking stats, like a crazy amount of attacking stats. I mean, they will come thick and fast in a really, really gun side like the Dolphins, don't get me wrong. But, I think he does provide enough. He certainly provides some injury optimism in terms of injury considerations. I think you can count on there being an uptick from him performance-wise. It's just then, do you think he can keep the attacking stats up, I think. But, yeah, if you're not keen to go right up to Harry Grant, but you want to try and find somebody who could still, you know, average around that 70, I think Jeremy Marshall-King's a good option.
It's a good share. I guess the only other one would be, do you reckon he goes 80 minutes with, who's a young bloke?
Yeah,
there?
Cody. Son. Yeah, Max. Oh, Max well, Plath, yeah. We'll see, like,
Plath, he's sort of been pretty touted as well, huh?
Yeah, well, they've got, like, quite a few. I don't know how they're going to go about it. Like, because they've obviously got O'Sullivan and Katoa, who are more than likely going to be starting halves. But then, like, Cody was really good last year, really good, even though he's got his frailties here and there. Then you've got, probably the favourite for bounce back player of the year, Anthony Milford, you know, coming off like he could, who knows what he could do. Dally M wouldn't be, you know, beyond his reach. But there's just a lot of guys in and around that 14, you know, backup hooker, that kind of thing, playing the halves. So, yeah, I don't know where they're going to go with that. But Wayne has seemed, even when we've had that guy on the bench, he's still, like Jeremy Marshall King, has still played 80 minutes. So I wouldn't be surprised if he continues to do it.
Very good. Gold Coast Titans is next there. I'm really interested to see what Des Hasler does with his squad and where he can sort of get them to. I think in terms of Supercoach, Fifita and Firma are pretty obvious edge players to like this year, so I'm not going to go into them in any sort of great depth. But I think a rogue one that I was just looking into over their squad, and Mo Fodawaker was a guy at front row forward that pumped out pretty big front row forward minutes. There's not a lot of guys that get as many minutes as Mo Fodawaker does. And he was close to 60 with a pretty, like, it's not an elite points per minute sort of split there for Mo, but he gets a little bit of a discount because he had a run of low scores towards the end of the year. He also got sent off in that Warriors game and he scored -2. He played 2 games in Queensland last year, so he seems to be fairly regarded by some heavy hitters in the Queensland setup. I don't know. I think he's just one to keep an eye on. He's probably not someone I'm going to start with in my team, but I think when you look at his minutes, that's pretty attractive for a front row forward. I think someone that you can plug in there who's guaranteed, you know, sniffing close to 60-plus minutes there, especially like in a setting where him and Tino are going to be running the minutes there in the middle for the Gold Coast Titans. But, you know, he's still young as well, Mo. He's still developing. He's had some exposure to high-level footy now as well. I don't think I want to put my money on him blowing up this year, but I think if he's just points per minute is just a little bit better, he's a 60 average player, which in front row is pretty goddamn valuable. So he's a deep dive. I don't know if it'll work out or not, but Desi Hasler's got some good performances out of front rows in the past, like, you know, Jimmy Graham, Sam Cassiano sort of spring to mind there. So it's not out of the realm that Desi could get him fit and firing. So I'm interested to see how that goes. In terms of players under sort of injury or bounce back for injury that you're interested in, Brian, who have you got there from the Titans?
Yeah, Bo Firma, I think, is the obvious pick here. It's his first season back off the ACL, but it does bode well that it happened for him early in the year last year, so he would have had pretty much a full off season to sort of build that performance base. We come back to there's a big difference between return to play and return to performance with these kind of ACL injuries. We usually wait for the second season back. But the fact that you could almost say that his off-season is kind of like a season because he would have had the whole off-season to kind of build that performance. So I still wouldn't expect him to be as good. I mean, we've seen someone like Pat Carrigan come back and just absolutely brain it, so it can be done. But that's the exception, not the rule. Look, he's not a big base stat guy usually, and he is a bit of an awkward price in that mid-range, but I still think he's just a great option. I'm just not as worried about him as I would be someone who suffered an ACL injury in like June or something like that, because he suffered in kind of January, February. Just think that gives him a lot more freedom to come back this year and be at a better performance level. It is worth mentioning that it's at least his second ACL injury, so it's his second documented ACL injury, so that does increase the risk of suffering a third. Most of those happen in the first 18 months after returning to play. So for the next couple of seasons, he's just at that increased risk of suffering another one. I still wouldn't shy away from him for that. I don't think there's enough of a increased risk to kind of be like, I'm not going to go there.
Yeah, he's just another one of those second rows in that mid-range sort of price, isn't he, that, you know, I think he's probably going to be a fair few teams, Bo Firma, but there's going to be a lot of mid-range guys there. And there's going to be some that don't work out. I think that's the thing. You might have 4 or 5 mid-range dudes in there, and there's going to be 1 or 2 that doesn't work out. That's just the way things fall year to year. But hopefully for you, if you pick him in your team, then he goes well. For the Manly squad, I'm going to talk about Ben Trbojevic. And I guess like the other brothers, he had a pretty injury-disrupted 2023. He only played 12 games. He had really limited minutes. But watching those games and thinking back, he actually had some pretty good flashes on the left edge there. I think at age 22, I'm pretty happy to plug him into my team and see what eventuates there. Team list will tell the story here, but Kelvin Tuolungi's moved on. Joshy Schuster's had fitness concerns for what seems like forever. So I don't know if he's really the starting left edge candidate. If Ben Trbojevic gets left edge, he's just a must start in my opinion in your team, and he's probably someone that you should draft higher than most other people. There was one other person from Manly that I wanted to shout out here, Brian, as well, because I think it's a super coach maybe for Tommy Talau. He's basement priced, but more importantly, if he has soft launched his relationship with NRLW Smoke Show and Footy Worldie Jess Sergis, then I mean, he's second year back from an ACL, but he's also dating Jess. I mean, that is two big ticks in the boxes there for Tommy Talau maybe having a breakout season. Also leaving the West Tigers. I mean, there's a few things aligning in the stars there for Tommy Talau. I think he might be the Schmokey that we need to talk up a bit more. Would you agree?
Comeback player of the year, you know? Like, yes, I think there's definite talk of that for sure.
Get him in there, I reckon. In terms of your pick for injury return, Brian, who did you have your eye on there? Friend of the show, probably?
Yeah, mate. I think my big statement for this preseason is, if Kalen Ponga, why not Tom Trbojevic? And what I mean by that is, and justifiably, right? Like, the guy has just won the Dally M, gone on an absolute tear. I think you would have seen all the Supercoach people under the sun, content creators, all that kind of stuff, with all these stats of, you know, if you take out the games where he's starting at six and you have the games where he's starting at fullback, and there's just so much to love about what Kalen did late in the year and what he's capable of and all that kind of stuff. But then I look at Tommy Turbo, and it's just the biggest case for me of recency bias ever, because Kalen has come out and just absolutely blitzed it, right? And just done so well. But for me, and look, I like to think I stay on top of injuries and all that kind of stuff, and I'll love to get your thoughts on this. But moving forward in this year, I haven't heard a lot of people talk about Kalen like they have Turbo in regard to injury risk, right? There's been a few like little mentions of Kalen can avoid concussion, but it's not like just like, oh, if Kalen could avoid concussion, like, he travelled halfway around the world, no, like not even 12 months ago, because it was like, am I going to continue to play footy because I've had that many concussions?
Yeah.
That is nothing to joke about. And I'll say I'm super keen on both of them, and I want both of them in my fullback spot. I'm happy to take the risk on both of them. But I guess the point that I'm making here is that just because Tommy Turbo, like, finished the year, you know, with a pec tear, and there is no way Tommy Turbo, for me, is at more of an injury risk heading into this year than Kalen Ponga. No way. And in terms of upside, I would probably say with the goal kicking, Kalen has more upside. But for example, like Turbo last year, there was a 3-game stretch there where he had like that weird back spasms. Then it wasn't back, it was his hip, it was a hip pointer. And then he strained his adductor. And that was all within a 3-game stretch where he just played horribly, and then he had the adductor strain and scored horribly, Supercoach wise. Now, I know a lot of people look at Tommy's like season last year as a bit of a failure. Those 3 games out, he averaged 98 last year. 98. Like, he is...
And that's his ceiling, isn't it? Like, so many blokes that have that ceiling.
That's what I mean. Like, I just think that... I just find it really interesting, because I'm all in on both of them. I think to start the year, I think you've got two guys who are at a bit of a discount. They absolutely have injury risk, but my main approach with these guys a lot of the time is, if you start with them, it only costs one trade to get rid of them, you know? So, like, I'm happy to go down that path. But, yeah, I just think it's something for you if you're sitting there and you're super, super keen on Ponga because of what he did late last year and, like, obviously his upside and all that kind of stuff. But you look at Tommy Turbo and you're like, oh, he's so injury prone. He's had, you know, all these kind of things. There's more connection for me between multiple concussions than a hamstring, like a history of hamstring injuries and then a pec tear and, like, back spasms. Like, that, yes, there is more than enough evidence there now to say that Tommy can find an injury, don't get me wrong. But as I said, Kalen was in all sorts of trouble, not even 12 months ago. And concussion is one of those injuries where the risk doesn't decrease very quickly. Like, that is stuff that, what, like, that concussion history is always there with you. So if he suffers another one moving forward, we're back there again. Like, we're back in the thick of, you know, is that too many? Does he have to retire? All that kind of stuff. It's just, yeah, they both, and I think it might come off like I'm talking negatively about them here, but I'm all about both of them because I think their upside is just so huge, and both of them will be far enough from removed from their injuries. Like, Ponga will be, you know, near to 12 months since his last concussion, and Turbo will be, you know, 6-8 months from his pec tear, which is way more than enough time. So I'm all in on both of them. I just think anybody out there who is sitting there saying, yeah, Ponga, 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 and then, nah, Turbo, like, too injury, you know, too much of an injury risk, I just think they're both pretty similar. Well, like, where would you sit? Would you... Do you see, like, think that, you know, I guess Ponga is much safer bet than Turbo? Am I kind of just rose-tinted glasses with Turbo, or are you kind of on the same wavelength?
I don't think necessarily. Like, there's going to be a lot of people that have cause for concern because of the number of games, I guess, he's missed in the last 5 years. I guess he hasn't had a full season for five seasons now, I think, or something along those lines. Anyway,
I think 20, his good year was 2020, I think, like that when he, you know, that COVID just, year. So he's probably had, 21, 22, 23 have been pretty rough for him.
Yeah. So I suppose if you're looking at draft, where would you take him if he fell to you? I think if you had pick 7 and he was there, you're probably having a pretty good sniff, I would say, because if he gives you 10 games, and he's scoring that type of average, that's still a lot of games you may potentially win, which could be a difference maker, you know, compared to the point of difference you get from a different six, like a Cam Munster, for example. Like, there could be a six that outperforms Cam Munster quite considerably. I think with Tom and that ceiling, it's just, my God, it's so hard to pass up at that point of the draft. If you're picking in that mid-late part of the first round, because you get stitched up so bad in draft if you're not getting the top three picks, because those three guys have the biggest ceilings, and you're trying to sort of shoot the lights out and make up that difference. So I think if you're in that mid-late part, you've got to hope you find lightning in a bottle. And I think Tom's one of those picks that can be like that. But, yeah, I guess to your point, is he more or less than Kayla? Look, I don't think so either. I think a lot of the stuff with Tom, I just look at it as being horrendously bad luck. He's just got, I don't know what he's done in a previous life, but, man, he's just been so seemingly so unlucky. In that Pappenhausen sense as well, where he's just been really, really unlucky with injury, but he wouldn't be someone I'd shy away from potentially starting with, I think, in fullback. I think, as it stands now, it probably would be Pappenhausen Ponga for me, but Tom's in amongst it. Like, he's got to be in the conversation for a very, very high draft pick, in my opinion. How high would you go on draft with Tom if he was there for you?
Yeah, I think I'm pretty similar. I probably haven't listed out my top 10 yet, but I think, like, it's clearly you got Cleary and Hines at 1 and 2, and then you've got your group of Ponga, Latrell, Turbo, like these kind of guys in that next bracket. So yeah, I agree with you. I think around that probably 6 to 7 range, I'm not against it, because I just think for a season that's seen as, yeah, like another failure and those kind of things, he suffers a contact or a traumatic injury in, you know, suffering that pec injury, and he's still averaged near 100 in his good games. And I say healthy games. Yes, I realize it's hard for him to find healthy games, but that's, I think my point isn't, I'm not sitting here saying Turbo is like this, going to go injury free this year for sure. It's more, I've just seen a lot of Kalen Ponga love, like a lot of it. And I'm like, yeah, I think the recency bias of people kind of being like, oh my God, Dally M, you know, he averaged over 100. And we were guys who, as soon as he went back to fullback, we were all over him. And I think that was what, you know, got us the ranks that we got last year, was getting on Ponga nice and early and getting behind that, because we were all about it. So it's not one of the few things that we got right last year. I just think I've seen a lot of Kalen Ponga love and a lot of you have to start with him, all that kind of stuff. And I just find it funny that that's kind of the universal approach to Ponga. Ponga when the injury concerns are relatively similar to a guy like Tommy Turbo?
Well, we'll jinx ourselves early. We'll say get on Burbo, get on Turbo, and then probably get on Tommy Talau as well. That's going to be the trifecta from Manly there. Coached by the genius of Tony Griffin there as well. So, oh, not Anthony Griffin. Seabold, sorry.
May as well be Bill Anthony Stormbrine, Griffin.
So we're going to, yeah, might as well be. Yeah, Griffo might have a bit more of a say there for the Manly boys. Onto the Storm now. I'm going to double dip it sort of like edge or sort of back row forward. So Sean Blaw's come across from the West Tigers, pretty highly publicised. I think a lot of people are high on him with his injury history. He hasn't really had a good opportunity there at the Tigers. But then also Jack Howarth, he's sort of been touted as the next big thing. He got a 5-year contract from the Storm at age 18, which they just don't do to many people. So I'm really interested to see if either of those guys get a start for the Melbourne Storm there. I think last year, was it Chris Lewis or Trent Loiero who had the edge locked down for most of the year with Katoa? Loiero was the one, wasn't it? And I think there was statistics there around, you know, line breaks and tackle breaks there that were fairly low in his situation. So I think someone like a Sean Blaw or a Jack Howarth could do similar to what Katoa has done coming across from the Warriors in being really, really, really good for the Melbourne Storm. They're guys I'm very, very keen to keep my eye on there for the Storm. Do you want to give us a bit of a rundown on Ryan Papenhuyzen? No, Ryan, I'm going to sort of steal your thunder there and mention his name, but he's one we've talked about a lot. And I think it's getting to the point where it's kind of exciting to potentially lock him into early teams, I reckon.
100%. Yeah, I think he's the obvious one for the Storm for injury implications. Look, how I feel about Paps, I'm still really confident on him. I still think he will perform better than many will expect. A lot of people kind of, you know, had him pegged for retirement and all that kind of stuff. Will be out well into the season. We were always pretty confident once the details started coming out that round one would be really realistic, and that's looking like it's the case. I think the one difference with Paps for me that probably puts him a little bit lower than my duo of Turbo and Ponga is he still does have that little bit of an injury risk concern, like compensation patterns, that kind of thing. But it's mainly around the performance. I just don't know. And when I say performance, it's less to do with the ankle. It's more the lingering stuff with the knee, to be honest, purely because the knee took so long to come back from. It was like right down the end of the bell curve as to how long it would take to come back from a patella fracture like that. He had some deficiencies in his quad that he was dealing with right up until returning. The ankle fracture dislocation for me doesn't really worry me much at all. We've seen guys come back and perform really well at about 10 weeks after those kind of injuries. So that injury in itself doesn't overly concern me, but the fact it was on the same leg as a knee that he had a really, really long, recovery time from, it just gives me enough pause to put him a little bit below Turbo. But I still think overall, I would not be shocked if he comes out and just it looks like the old Paps. That's definitely within the realms of possibility. But I just think while that's in the realm of possibility, there's also this end down here where he could take a while to get back to that usual speed. And that's, for me, once again, you talk about concern of injury risk and then concern of performance. I don't have the concerns of performance with guys like Turbo and Ponga. Like, I know when they're out there, if they don't get injured, they're going to kill it. Like, I count on them for 100 averages. Like, I just think they're going to kill it. Whereas for someone like Paps, I probably have a little bit less concern of injury risk because they're two really unlucky contact injuries. But they're, as I said, it's those compensation patterns, those kind of things. But yeah, I say all that. If I had three fullback spots, he would be my third fullback at this point in time. And I think if he comes out and looks really good in the trials, because he's got that little bit less of a concern of an injury risk, I'd be more than happy to plug him in there over a Turbo. But yeah, that's kind of the one thing that just separates them for me at this point. But I think it's very, very valid to do what you're doing and to go with him in the second fullback spot.
Yeah, price will be the one as well. I think perhaps might be a little bit cheaper to start off with than Turbo 2. So I think it might be a fairly popular pick for a lot of teams to get the year going. On to the Knights, Brian. We've talked about Cullen Ponga. I'm going to talk about him again. So probably just to sweeten the deal here, you look at when he came back in round 11 to the fullback spot, once Adam O'Brien figured out that actually playing a buy in his best spot is a good thing for your rugby league football team, he started humping blokes left, right and centre on his march to Dally M. So from round 11, once, and then from round 18 when he got the goal-kicking boots, he averaged 119. So from round 18 onwards, 119 average. He's priced in at averaging 88. So it probably doesn't reflect of just how good he was last year and how slow he was to start the season. So I think he's just one of those guys with that sort of a ceiling. He just is a must-have in your team. The only other one, I guess we need to get onto Jackson Hastings, who's friend of the show, and obviously give us a word on if he's kicking goals this year or not. So if Jackson's got the kicking boots, that might be cause for maybe flicking to someone differently. Still think he's probably starting with Cullen Ponga regardless. I think he'll be probably the most highly rostered person.
I just don't think Hastings will be kicking. I don't think Hastings will be kicking coming off that ankle issue, like off the surgery and stuff like that.
No, that's very true.
Yeah.
That's his right ankle as well, wasn't it? Yeah, that's true. Yeah, good shout, actually. So, and there's no one else in that squad that I can think of that's handy with the boots because their spine's still intact. So, no outside backs. No, I can't think of anyone else, actually. So it's probably going to be Kalen, isn't it, when you think about it? So it makes it lock and load, in my opinion. Who have you got from the Knights there that you want to keep an eye on, Brian, from an injury point of view?
Jaden Brayley, I think, is the other obvious one behind Cullen Ponga. So it is his second ACL on that leg. Round one is approximately 10 and a half months post-surgery. He's gone overseas to Bill Knowles, our favourite Bill Knowles. But, yeah, look, I'd just be surprised if they shovel a big workload onto him early with, you know, the Crossland emergence. This is his second ACL injury. Yeah, I just think, you know, we've spoken about the mental side of these injuries on this pod, even on this episode. So, look, he's not a noted, like, stepper, change of direction, that kind of thing, which is what the ACL is more known for. So he can still, you know, get through a million tackles and all that kind of stuff. But, yeah, I just think there is absolutely a realm where he's, yeah, just easing back into a full workload over the first 6 to 8 weeks at least. So, I wouldn't even be surprised if they start him off the bench, you know, to ease him back in that way with how good Crossland was late last year. So, what I think for Classic, he's almost just a lot because he's like 300 grand or something. I haven't looked at my team picker yet. I've just seen sort of what other people are posting and those kind of things. But I would say, yeah, at 300 grand, you can't pass him up. But from a draft perspective, he's not someone who I'm chasing overly heavily.
We're not relevant. Yeah, I'd agree. We might move forward to the New Zealand Warriors, Brian. So I've chosen Roger Tuivasa-Sheck. So I think a lot of people are thinking, oh, RTS is back. He's going to be in my Supercoach team. Even if he's in the centres, he's still being a Jet. But when you look at the guys who've come back from a stint in rugby union, they've just never come back at their rugby league apex, if at all. So, like, you look at Sonny Bill, you look at Sam Burgess, you look at Lottie, you look at Matty Rogers, Wendell Saylor, Benji Marshall. Like, none of them have come back to what they were when they left. And there might be someone else there that I'm missing there that I can't recall. So, you know, dox me in the DMs if you want to. But I guess it's just, can Roger buck the trend of that? I just don't necessarily see it happening from center wing. I think the only way he becomes enormously fantasy relevant is if there's an unfortunate injury to Chance and he gets the fullback spot. Because as it stands at the moment, I just don't think he's going to be someone that I have got locked into my center wing position like I've seen a lot of other people have. So I'm happy to not start with him. If he blows up and carves, then I'll eat humble pie. I think I'm happy to do that just based on what I've seen historically. The one thing in his favour is he's had a full off season to probably, you know, get you know, weight and shape, you know, back into sort of league form rather than rugby union form. But a lot of those blokes who were guns went and came back. They didn't come back as explosively as they sort of left. So I just, that sort of gives me a little bit of trepidation and just thinking, should we really make Roger a must-have in centre wing? I'm sort of leaning against that. What about from your point of view, Brian, with like Roger and your other player you wanted to talk about, do you think he's someone that's a must start or must have for your initial team?
No, I don't think so. Not playing centre wing. I think if he's at fullback, 100%. Like if something happens to Chance between now and the start of the season, you just absolutely lock him in. But yeah, at centre, yeah, I'm not fussed. I love Roger, don't get me wrong. But yeah, at centre, I just, yeah, I can't get around that. To start with, my player, Tohu Harris, look, worth remembering. Once again, he played through a knee issue for most of last season. Bit of a weird sequence. You'll hear me talk all the time about MCL sprains having a low re-injury rate, and it's because they're those contact injuries, you know, a bit of bad luck. He at least aggravated it once and potentially twice. So he did return like relatively quickly. Like he suffered the MCL sprain, came back earlier than expected. You know, he's pretty important to that Warriors side. And then he had an ankle sprain later in the year, which he came back early from as well. So played reduced minutes and those kind of things. So once again, injury affected games out. It bumps his average up about 6 points from 67 to 73 or so. So he's another one who, you know, could potentially be on a bit of an uptick because a lot of those, and I know it seems a bit cheap to kind of be like, oh, just take these injury games out and he'll be fine. I'm trying not to be lazy there. I'm trying to kind of keep it at like, well, those injuries I don't see as massive repeatable injuries. Like I don't see an MCL sprain as something Tohu Harris now is susceptible to moving forward. He's as susceptible as any other person in a tackle who gets tackled in the legs and, you know, their knee could collapse in. So, yeah, that's I try and keep it that way. Sometimes, you know, with the likes of Turbo and stuff like that, I'd be a bit liberal with it. But even then, like, when we were talking about Turbo, it was back spasms and, you know, a cork and those kind of things, which isn't something I would say Turbo is overly susceptible to. So that's where I try and go with when I take out injury-affected games is I try and make sure it's not something, you know, that I think is repeatable moving forward. So, yeah, look, just something to keep an eye on with Tohu. He could have a bit of an uptick there.
One team that disappointed last year was the North Queensland Cowboys, Brian. So we're going to talk about them now. I've chosen to speak about Jeremiah Nanai. So he averaged 57 last year in 2023, and he had a massively mixed season. So he had multiple suspensions, he had sin bins, he had non-80-minute games, he had pretty significant try-scoring regression, which isn't out of the realms of happening. Then he had an awesome game in Origin 2, and then he got an absolute bath in Game 3 by Cody Walker, Bradman Best, when they were just carving up down that left edge for the Blues. In the last 6 games of the year, he averaged 70, and again, he had a mix of tries, lack of minutes in there in the end. I guess if I was a Cowboys fan, I'd probably be in that mid-range again for a second role, but I don't know if I'm necessarily going to be there quite yet unless there's word out of the Cowboys that he's, you know, they're shaping up for a much bigger and better season. But he's a bit of a smoky old Jeremiah Nanai because he had such a good rookie season. And I think last year you just have to sort of write off and put it in the bin and probably expect bigger and better things from him this year, in my opinion.
Yeah, mate. I think those last 6 games kind of ruined, in a way, what could have been a really, really hot buy to come into this year. Like, I think the fact that he just killed it in those last 6 games puts him at that price where you probably don't want to dance with him at that point just yet. So, yeah, he's someone who I'm like you. I could absolutely see some improvement, but there's just enough doubt there for me to be a bit wary. My pick is the guy on the other edge, or more than likely he'll be on the other edge, which is Hylam Lukey. It's his second season back from an ACL injury. He didn't play 80 minutes once last season, just checking there now. Yeah, so, you know, we saw what he...
surprising, isn't it?
Yeah, like, yeah. We saw what he could do in 2022. So I really like him for a bounce-back season. I think I saw some footage of Luciano at pre-season training. He's looking a bit bulky, so I just wonder whether he... Look, Luch has always been a bit bulky, but I just wonder whether he's moving into the middle. Like, I think if I was a Cows fan, I'd love a front row of Jason Taumalolo, Ruben Cotter, and then Luciano at 13 or something like that. I think that'd be you know, because they've got Lukey, they've got Nanai, and they've got that, I want to get his name right, Finifuiaki, I think. Yeah, who is like an absolute gun on the edge as well. So they've got a lot of edges. So I think like finding one of those guys to move into the middle would be super valuable, because the ghost of Jordan McLean and the ghost of Cohen Hess are currently playing in there at the moment. And, or sorry, I should have said the corpses of those two guys. So I think, if Lukey is named to start there, I think he could have a really good year. He's a real sneaky draft pick for me. I don't mind him late rounds.
Yeah, like that. For the Parramatta Eels, Brian, everyone's talking about it, but it's Sean Lane season, isn't it? You know, he's going to be left edge outside of Dylan Brown. If he gets 80 minutes, the attacking stats are going to come there. He's that sort of player. He averaged 69 in 2022, and he's pricing at 700 grand. So if you're a Supercoach sicko, there's plenty to like there for Sean Lane on the bounce back there. Who have you singled out there from the Parramatta Eels, Brian, to keep an eye on from an injury point of view?
Gutho for me. I think meniscus repair, look, he's known as a workhorse kind of guy. I've spoke about Teague Wilton earlier in the show about how the meniscus repair doesn't overly stress me. It's more a long-term injury. The one thing about Gutho here is he has a history of two ACL injuries in the past as well. So it's just starting to stack up those knee injuries, those major knee injuries. It is a little bit concerning. You just wonder, and I think there was, Facebook rumors or whatever, there was something where he was dealing with an injury the other day or something like that. And while, once again, the old Facebook rumors or the DM, you know, I got my first big wave of DMs this year about Gutho mid this week. Oh, he suffered an injury, all that kind of stuff. I'm like, oh, yeah. Footy season's not far away. You know, hook it to my veins. Give me those DM injury rumors. But look, like it could have been something like, once again, and I know I'm feeding into this bullshit, but it could have been something where, you know, he's got swelling on his knee from the meniscus repair. Like we've spoken to a guy like Christian Welsh on the podcast before, who said after those meniscus surgeries, you know, it's something you still have to manage moving forward, especially later in your career, which Gutho is, as opposed to Wilton a little bit more. So yeah, just something to consider with Gutho. I think he's somebody who, he was so good last year, but I've just got a little bit of hesitation with him heading into this season. So from a draft perspective, I think like he drops back for me. Like he probably deserves from his average last year like a solid second round pick, but I'm probably looking like late second into the third for me with him, just off the back of a meniscus repair.
Yeah, I think that's a fair take. And there's a few fullbacks that have jumped up a little bit more as well that have probably leapfrogged him there in terms of guys who are probably younger on the upswing in their careers too. For the Penrith Panthers, Brian, I've chosen to talk about Jerome Luai. We've seen Jerome a lot in the papers and the media over the offseason with his contract situation. I just think if it's his last season in Penrith, I think he's just going to be fired up to play big. I think he's that sort of character. I'll back him in to have a good season. Last season, he had a really, really, really poor start to the Supercoach season. So first 10 rounds, averaged 41. And then the last six games before his shoulder injury, he averaged 77. That's when the attacking stats started to finally roll in. So when you look at Jerome over his, you know, body of work from a Supercoach point of view, since 2020, he's always been between 56 and 62. So he's always consistently there. I think State of Origin, his starting price, maybe mean that if he's probably a target once he's leaked some money rather than as a starter. But I still back his talent. I think he's a gun. And 5'8's really shallow. So I think if you're looking at someone who's leaked some money, you might need to move sideways for a little bit of time. He might be on the outside looking in for Origin. It's hard to really know how it's going to shape up this year. There's so many moving pieces there. I think he's someone that is just an interesting overview with all the noise happening around him as well. There's been so much noise here and there with his situation with Penrith and the West Tigers, obviously. But when you take a step back, you actually see he's a pretty consistently decent scoring Supercoach player at a shallow spot, Brian. So who did you want to speak about for the Penrith Panthers this year for 2024?
Yeah, on Luai, I'm not stressed about the shoulder eco for performance-wise for him. Like, he's not a middle forward. He's not making a million tackles. I'm not fussed at all. So I think you approach him If you think he's for a bounce back in form, like you've just said, you jump on him. You don't worry about the shoulder reco. My pick, Taylor May. It's, once again, his first season back from an ACL injury, but similar to Firma, it'll be almost 12 months. I think he suffered in the trials, or it might have even been in the World Cup Challenge, maybe. I can't remember, but it was definitely early in the season.
Yeah,
so
it was actually, you're right, yeah.
Yeah, yep. So it was early in the season. But he is an outside back, so you've got that change of direction, explosiveness in question around the ACL, but he's playing in a hot Panthers back line, so there's still plenty to like. So I still think if he's named a start for your classic sides, I think you just lock him in.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's a must-start at centre wing for classic. For the St. George Illawarra Dragons, I've chosen to speak about Zach Lomax. He sort of is one that I flirt with every year in my Supercoach team. Last year was a pretty slow season for Zach. He averaged 54 until round 18. But then as the season went on, he's obviously hot. Like, let's put that to the side as well. He's a proven gun in the past. He's averaged over 60 many, many times. But then last year he played out of position on the left sort of center position for a bit. And then the Dragons were woeful. Then they had coaching changes. His goal kicking was dreadful. And he had 7 tries in 20 games. I just think there's just room for him to have a much better season this year if he's on his favoured right centre position. There is a few whispers about him maybe interchanging at fullback with Tyrell Sloan. I don't know to read too much into that by Flanagan down there. I just think he's probably a fairly robust start at right centre. He may not be a starter for my standard setups, but he's someone in draft I'll always have my eye on, to be honest, for Zach Lomax. What about you, Brian, in terms of the Dragons? Who's someone that you think might be worth monitoring?
Yeah, I didn't come up with much here. I just said Tyrell Sloan with his syndesmosis repair. I just don't think it'll limit him. I think if you, for whatever reason, you're keen on Tyrell Sloan, I wouldn't worry about the syndesmosis surgery.
Yeah, very good. For the Bunnies, I've got Latrell Mitchell. So, as you know, Brian, we've always been big Bill Noel fans on this podcast, and obviously, hopefully, his stint over there last year with the Guru optimizes Latrell for this year. There's obviously massive risk with Latrell baked in, so we know he's had soft tissue injuries over the last few years. It's really going to be the chassis looks like at the Charity Shield, isn't it? Like, if he's looking like he's in really good nick, he might be someone that I consider over Ryan Pappenhausen to partner up with Kalen Ponga. I think if he's lean, he's looking good, you've got to be keen on him. I don't think he'd be very highly owned to start the season because there's a lot of good fullback options. But the thing I really like about Latrell is that when he plays a fairly low-ranked footy team, he's one of the most set-and-forget captain options in Supercoach, which is pretty valuable in my opinion. So if you can, you know, partner that when he's going to play some bottom eight teams and the Bunnies get rolling, I think he could be really, really valuable. But I really just want to see what he looks like, what it's moving like in the Charity Shield. I think that's going to be the one. If he looks good in Charity Shield, he looks keen, he looks lean, he would be definitely into my teams. I love having him in my team. But if he doesn't look like he's in, you know, optimal fitness level or as fit as he's ever looked sort of type vibes, then he may not be a consideration for me there for the Bunnies. So what are your thoughts on Latrell, Brian? Like, has he been someone that you've had in your Supercoach setups many times or often?
Yeah, mate, I'm a big Latrell guy when he's going well. I think, like, to your point, the soft tissue nature, like a lower limb soft tissue nature of his injuries over the last couple of years does give me some pause. Like, it's just repeated soft tissue stuff. And then, you know, like that calf, it just, and there's a lot of bandied around, like blaming.
It's just forever, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, blaming the physio, blaming New South Wales, all that kind of stuff. That kind of thing just gave me a little bit of what's going on here, especially with his history with the hammy and those kind of things. He's gone over to Bill Knowles, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, he's definitely fourth in the group of those four fullbacks that we've spoken about there, who I want in classic. I think in draft, I would still take him over Paps and Turbo, but it's not by much, because I think while his injury issues haven't been as significant as someone like Turbo or Paps, I think there is still that concern of the repeatable nature of, you know, the lower limb soft tissue strain. So he's someone who I'm still always interested in because, as you, like all the reasons you mentioned, but yeah, I'm just a little bit hesitant. Like you, I'd really need to see something from him in that, in that charity shield. My guy who I've gone for is Campbell Graham. So he played, it was very well publicised, he played through that sternum issue, which was ongoing all year. He missed games. He missed out on Origin because of it. And something a bit cool, a mutual friend of ours who is, now I don't want to get this wrong, but is Maxi a rheumatology specialist? Yeah, that's right. So I got in contact with one of the smartest people that we know to talk about this, because Campbell Graham actually had a bone infusion, which I had only heard of it in my elderly patients. Like, that is the only time I've ever come across it, when they've got like osteoporosis and those kind of things. So they use this IV treatment to effectively, the way I've had it described to me is it kind of poisons the osteoclasts, which are the part of the bone that sort of reabsorb the bone. So it stops you from reabsorbing bone effectively. I think I might be getting that wrong. So sorry, Maxi, if you're listening. I'm sure he's a religious listener to the Magic Sponge pod. But yeah, effectively he's had this treatment, which is he's had this treatment, which is a is reserved for elderly patients with osteoporosis most of the time, and he's having it for his sternum. So, like, I think there's some prospects that he's, if he's over the sternum, that's something that would have just been killing him all season. So he performed so well last year, there's prospects for him to be even better. But then you've got the added component of, if he's gone to those lengths, I think in Maxi's words, it was something like, yeah, like if he's getting that done as an athlete, he's in all sorts of trouble. So that does give me some concern for him added as well. So yeah, so just something to keep an eye on. I think if we hear reports that, you know, Campbell Graham's over it, his sternum's fine, then I'm all in on him. I think he's a great option. But if there's kind of something coming out, he's still dealing with, you know, some pain in his sternum, stuff like that, I could not be further away from him. So here to there, it's all over the shop.
Yeah, it's a good one, isn't it? He was so good before his sternum injury, though, wasn't he, Campbell Graham? Like, I had even in the Invitational, and he was just pumping out scores week to week to week. It was historically, like, the Bunnies were, like, left edge so heavy, and then last year it just flipped around, and Campbell Graham was just scoring meat pies for fun on the right side there. So, yeah, he's someone, if he's fit, he's really going to be high up in your centre wing rankings. For the Roosters, Brian, we're going to go on to them as a side. Such a weird year for them last year. Some bizarre selections there from coaching and, you know, injuries throughout the year. I want to dive into Angus Crichton here, because he had probably the biggest stinker of a Supercoach season ever that I can think of. He was, previously, he's a guy who's averaged 76, 75 and 66 over his last three seasons. And last year, he averaged 40. So if you cast your mind back to 2023, late in the off-season, got a bipolar diagnosis, and he didn't come back until round eight. So then he also had a late-season MCL injury, I think, as well, and he played, you know, bugger all minutes in there, and then he was out of the rotation. There was Nat Butcher, Egan Butcher, Siwa Wong. What to make of Trent Robinson's coaching selections here? I don't know how that's going to shake out there, especially with Crichton and Sam Walker's examples last year. The other thing that I sort of realised as well was there was almost a deal in place with him to go to rugby union, where Hamish McLennan was the CEO there. So Hamish McLennan and the Crichton family are like family friends. So that was almost done, signed, sealed, delivered. But then that when McLennan got booted, I think that fell through. So Rugby Australia said, no, we're not going to honour that contract anymore. So there's this added layer of, is Angus Crichton and playing for a contract this year as well? I don't know. Like, I think if he is in that scenario where he's playing for a new deal, I think you're going to see someone who is super motivated, who is a proven gun, who's played Origin in the past. He's versatile. He can play edge or, you know, in the middle there. I think if he gets named in the starting team on an edge, he's just got to be someone that you have, and maybe someone that you take a punt on and draft a bit higher than you might think you would. I think Angus Crichton's a really interesting one, because last year was just such a, you know, bizarre season for him with, you know, the really delayed start, the complications with that, and then everything else happening in the background there. And where it sort of leaves him in the wash with that team is interesting, isn't it? Because there's not a lot of clarity about how they're going to line up for round one, the Roosters. So sometimes when there's a bit of unknown, that's where you can cash in on a bit of value in Supercoach for sure, isn't it?
Yeah, it's been said by way smarter people than us footy-wise, which is not many, but like the Roosters are just so deep this year, especially in the forwards. So how they're going to fit all those guys in and get them minutes, I just don't know. I mean, from my perspective, from a Supercoach perspective, I'm absolutely salivating for a Siwa Wong, Angus Crichton, Edge combo. Like, that would just be the dream for me. But I just feel like, knowing Robbo is the coach, it's going to be Egan and Nat Butcher. That's all we're going to have to deal with. I feel like that's what it's going to be anyway.
Yeah, probably.
So,
Or just a timeshare, which would be also as bad.
Just a nightmare. So, yeah, look, my pick for the Roosters, Billy Smith. It's his second season back from his latest ACL injury, which is his third one back. I just think this is notable because, I don't know, once again, there's only a few people who are better than us at judging footy, but I just thought he looked better than Suoli'i last season, especially towards the back end of the year. Like, I thought he looked really, really good. And that being, you know, his first season back from a third ACL injury, he's only going to get better this year. Like, Suoli'i obviously had the rugby thing hanging over his head, and we know how good he is. Like, we know he's an absolute gun. So I just don't see a scenario where Suoli'i isn't making the side. But I just wonder whether Billy Smith has done enough to win one of the centre spots, and then Suoli'i goes out onto a wing. Like, there's a Daniel Tupou who, you know, has had that groin issue that is re-torn late last season. I think it'd be pretty scandalous to drop Daniel Tupou, but I've seen Robbo do weirder things. So I don't know where he's going to go with that. But yeah, I just feel like Billy looked really good in centre last year. So I just think he's only going to get better this year is the point that I make. He's always an injury risk because I think going from a third to a fourth, it's like 30 or 40% of guys in the NRL who suffer three ACL injuries going to suffer a fourth. So he's absolutely got that risk there. But yeah, I just think if he can jag a spot, I think he's only going to improve.
Yeah, and you just have to think the Roosters are going to be better this year as well. Like, last year was, I know they made the eight, but geez, they underperformed for a lot of that season. Lucky last, Brian, we're going to talk about the West Tigers here. There wasn't anyone that was super interested here, but if you had to put a gun to my head and I had to find a mid-rangey sort of player, I was going to talk about Isaiah Papali'i. Previously averaged 78, 79, and then last year only put up 56 as an average, and he sort of shedded 300 grand. So if you chose him in your team early doors, he had pretty limited attacking stats in a wooden spoon roster. You probably weren't super happy. Also lost his dual position, so lost dual second row and front row last year. So I don't think there's anyone really from the Tigers that I see as a must-have to start off the season. But if you had to put a gun to my head of who I'd probably roll the dice on in a draft format, Isaiah Papali'i is probably the one for me that, you know, maybe he just has an uptick in attacking stats. He's going to be playing 80 minutes on that left edge most likely again, like he did last year. He's one of their marquee signings. He's probably good as chance as any, I would dare say. What about yourself? Who have you got your eye on for the West Tigers there to finalise things?
Yeah, I just say Adam Dewey's probably the big one. He's kind of been the forgotten guy, I think, in all this Jerome Luai kind of stuff, is that, you know, he's obviously signed on. They've got, you know, who are they going to have? Aiden Caesar. They've got the young fellas in Latu, Finu, and Jaden Sullivan. You know, all this kind of stuff. And Dewey's, you know, they're just slogging away. Adam Dewey, famously, 2022, our injury buy of the year. That went down a treat. But, you know, we'll always be Dewey fans on this show, I think. I'll always be his fan, but I just think this isn't going to be his year. He had his second stage of his ACL reconstruction in July. So, you know, a return from 9 months onward could be potential. So what's that, like April-ish? But the sooner he returns, the more concern I have over his performance and his workload and those kind of things. And then I think Like, I do think...
Tigers have been conservative too, haven't they? Like, that's, when you look at them in the past. Like, they've been probably one of the more conservative teams.
100%. So that's kind of... I just see them taking it a bit easier with him. I wonder if, with Luai not coming till next year, do they bring Dewey through Cup? Because they're like, well, we've got these young guys who want to try it at 5'8". Maybe they've got a few young guys who they want to try out at centre. I think this is Dewey's last year of his contract. So if they're not really that interested in re-signing him, does he get back into the NRL team at all? It's just a lot of questions. So, yeah, he's not someone from a draft perspective who I, you know, I was taking him. I think 2 years ago I said don't take him no matter what. Last year I said take him in the first round, and now I'm saying I probably wouldn't take him at all. So, yeah, a bit of a fall from grace for Dewey, but I still believe he was a wonderful pick last year. I'm just devastated that he did his ACL again. Poor bugger.
Yeah, it was pretty lucky. I had a coin flip between him and Matty Burton, and Matty Burton didn't set the world on fire, but at least he got through a whole season. So yeah. I got kind of lucky there. But then I was pick 8, and you know who was pick 7? It was Tommy Turbo. And when I saw him off the board, I nearly cried, because the drop-off there between pick 7 and pick 8, it was just a cliff, and I was like, bloody hell. That's where you do not want to be in draft any time for NRL. You don't want to be less than probably 4 or 5, I reckon, any season, because your drop-off's just so massive. Yeah. Brian, that's a wrap of all the teams. We've done really well to get through all that. Very last thing we're going to do is look at the Patreon questions. So as per usual, patreon.com/NRLphysio if you want to have a chat to Brian and drop in your questions for him to answer. The only one we've got in here tonight is about the shape that Valence Tafare is in. He's looks like he's lost a stack of weight, and one of the patrons here wants you to send him the program. And he says, thanks in advance for sending me the program, because Val's looking lean.
Mate,
what's he doing, Brian? What's a good source?
I stood next to him yesterday, and look, we all know that I'm a big Val guy, so I'm happy to talk about, you know, just the joy that he brings to me as a big man, or not as big a man anymore. But yeah, I couldn't believe how light he was. Like, he was 124 kilos, and I saw the photos of him, and I missed him all day. Like, we got there early. My daughter was so keen to, you know, she was really, really keen to go and get her face painted and all that kind of stuff. There was a fan day on Saturday. And, I just didn't see him all day. The players were kind of rotating around. I'm like, oh, it's just not going to happen. And it's funny, I was there with my brother, and you know my brother, and he was the Cows before the Finns came in, but he's obviously come over to the Finns as well, you know, trader. But yeah, that was where we were born and bred, so we're back on the Finns. And so his favourite player at the Cows was Tommy Gilbert. And so Tommy's obviously come over as well. Yeah. So my brother was super keen to get on, like to get a photo with Tommy or get his autograph or something like that. And all I wanted was a photo with Val. I got a photo with Edric Lee for the whole Lee Cousins thing, because I love that G up that they are like Queensland Origin legends. But I was just like, oh, bugger, I'm not going to get a photo with him. And as we were leaving, we were walking out the door at like 10:45. It was due to finish at 11. And we walked past one station, and there was Tommy Gilbert, and brother got a photo with him. And we walked past the next station, and there was Val. And there was no line for either of them under the radar kind of guys. And yeah, I almost didn't recognize him. Like, he is so, I don't know how he's done it. I think it was running up and down Mount Cootha over and over again. So Ben, very valued listener and valued patron Ben, he's a wonderful guy, mate. I tried to ask him, and he just kind of chuckled it off and said a lot of running. So if I could do it, I've got a few dad kilos to lose here as well. So I wouldn't mind getting on the same program, but I also wouldn't want to be on the end of a Wayne Bennett roasting for being overweight. So I think I, you know, take it either way. But look, guys, that's a wrap for this week. A bit of a long one to start the year, but we figured we'd kick it off with a bang and give you a whole bunch of information to wade through. Hopefully you've got a couple of weeks to get through this over the next couple of weeks before the trials start. As always, look, we're starting off the season. If you like the pod, give us a review, recommend to a friend, all that kind of stuff. It gets us up in front of people's eyeballs and in their ears, and it helps us a lot. If there's anyone out there who wants to sponsor the show, where the show's always growing, always looking to bring people on board who are like-minded and those kind of things. So if you're looking to reach people in this kind of footy or health space, then hit us up. I think we've also said if there are any alfoil companies out there who want to sponsor a tinfoil hat segment, we're more than happy to jump on board there as well. But otherwise, James, this is number one of what's more than likely going to be a lot of pods this year. I'm pretty excited. Just get footy back and get Supercoach back is all I want. I just want that back. Get me drafting, man. I'm hungry for some drafts.
Yeah, froth levels are building, Brian. So we're going to be looking forward to big and better things on the Magic Sponge this year. Can't wait, mate. Let's strap in and do it.
Awesome, mate. All right, guys. Look, this is the first. I was like, what do I say at the end? I always say up the mighty, mighty Redcliffe Dolphins.
Suspected broken left fibula.
Suffering syndesmosis.
After that stem cell injury that he's come back from.
That's about it, mate.